Welcome back to the show for caregivers about caregivers, hosted by a caregiver. I am Peter Rosenberger, bringing you 30 plus years of experience to help you stay strong and healthy as you take care of someone who is not. And by the way, thank you for the BJ Thomas version of that one.
I thought you might like that.
Everybody likes blue suede.
Of course. But I know you're a fan. So
big fan of BJ.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's wonderful. And listen, thank you for that, John. John Butler, the Count of Monte Disco. If you're now just joining us across the country on the Truth Network, this is the show that is about strengthening the family caregiver. We're going to bring you stories, resources, insights, lessons learned the hard way to help you as you deal with this reality, because it is a very difficult thing to put yourself between a vulnerable loved one and even worse disaster. And one of the people that knows that better than most is my guest right now, Kathy Cole. Kathy, you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, you are always welcome, and I love your story. Tell us a little bit about you. You're calling in from California, right?
Well, actually, I am out of town from California right now at a writer's workshop in upstate Washington State, but I am from California.
Well, is it a little cooler up there?
Yes, it's very cool. It's wonderful. It's very refreshing.
I was going to say, Washington State is one of the coolest out there.
It is a cool state. Yeah. Would you do me a favor and just tell us a little bit about your journey with Dawn and bring us up to speed on that, and then I want to get into some of the things that you've done since then.
Okay. Well, my husband, I have to tell you, was the most, of course, most wives that are in love are going to say most incredible, blah, blah, blah. So I will say my husband was the most incredible, rock of Gibraltar, loving person I could ever imagine. And then, bingo, our lives changed. And I was actually driving home one day because we were going to have a dinner party, and he called me from the office and said, call our guests. And he sounded perfectly fine on the phone, by the way, but he said, call our guests and tell them, we can't have the party. And I said, why? And he said, well, I just don't feel well. And so I started questioning him about that, and he said, well, apparently the people at work said my balance is off, which he knew, and he was slurring his words a little bit, which he wasn't on the phone, by the way. So I asked him if he thought he was having a stroke, because he was always afraid he'd have one day, because his sister and father both passed away from strokes when they were in their 50s. And he said, well, I don't know, but I'm just about to leave for the hospital. So I rushed to the hospital, met him, never saw him again standing because he was on the gurney, but he looked good. They had just done the tests, and it turned out he had a blood clot in his brain very close to his brain stem. And at the time, I had no idea what a brain stem was. I didn't know anything about strokes. I was really naive to all of this. So anyway, long story short, he went in for the surgery. The doctor came out and said, we got most of the clot, but it was a very large, hard clot, and we couldn't get it all. And so I said, no, you've got to go back in there and get it all. My husband is the type that just goes for broke. But back in those days, this was 2005, they just weren't as sophisticated in doing that. And so my husband came too. We could talk. He hugged me. He told me he loved me and that I needed to go home and get a good night's sleep so we could make the decision the next morning on what was the next route. So anyway, within like an hour, I got the dreaded call, please, Mrs. Cole, get to the hospital as fast as you can. So I got there as fast as I could. They had to go back into surgery and came out and said, gosh, it's almost like a miracle. There is no clot. Well, what happened, the clot that was left, itsy bitsy tiny, had traveled through his bloodstream, and on its way out, it nicked his brainstem. And the brainstem is what empowers you to your movement. And he woke up completely locked in, could not move anything from the neck down, couldn't breathe, couldn't talk, couldn't eat. And all he could do was blink his eyes. And for the first time, I saw fear in my husband's eyes. I'd never seen what I call my Rock of Gibraltar ever looking scared before. And so that was the start of our journey. So if you picture Christopher Reeves, that would be what my husband was like. One of the first things I asked him was, Don, the way I look at it is we're not going to fight a war. We're both going to fight a sporting game, you know, a sports. We're on a team. I'm on a team. You're on a team. Are we on the same team? Do you want to win the game? You know, sort of, do you want to, you know, throw in the towel? And I said, just give me one blink for yes if you're on the team, two blinks for no. Because that way I sort of had my marching orders, I guess you might say. He gave me the biggest one blink. And I said, okay, I've got it. So that's where we started from in the first few days. The doctors told us he probably wouldn't live more than 24 hours. He ended up living 6.5 years. And then from there, I guess you could say that's where my caregiving experience began for the first time ever, being with anyone disabled, anyone that had all of these things that happened as far as depression, my depression, figuring out how to, you know, buy a wheelchair. I didn't know any of it. So that's sort of how it started. And then, I don't know, the ending was 6.5 years later, my husband passed away, and the saddest part was my brother fell down and hit his head and had a brain bleed, and my husband died 2 days later. So they were both Dons, and they both passed away within 2 days of one another.
Well, you certainly
so
had
that's
a,
my story.
Well, that's a heck of a story, Kathy, and you certainly have had a crash course on this, and I'm really sorry for that. But it didn't stop with it. That's your story of taking care of your husband, but then something connected with you, and you went even further than this. And that's what really intrigued me about what you've done, because it wasn't enough for you to just survive that. You took on a whole new mission. And talk to me a little bit about that.
Okay. So in realizing how difficult it was to be a caregiver, I have to say and tell anyone who's listening, I was very fortunate because through my husband's success in business, we were able to afford more than a lot of people could afford as far as, you know, I could leave the house. I could have a professional caregiver come in and be with him or have the nurse with him. So I could go out, which not that often, but, you know, if I wanted to, I could. There's so many people out there that can't, I mean, they can't go to the grocery store. They are the sole person taking care of their loved one. And so I just started thinking about how I felt and how fortunate I was to be able to have that being able to do other things. And so I decided to start a foundation where I could help caregivers in need, caregivers that are making like less than $28,000 a year or with a family less than $34,000, to give them a little respite. So I guess in the last 2 years, I've helped about 50 caregivers and, you know, through donations from people. And I help with, and I guess the monetary part is $500 to $1,500, and it's anywhere from helping with their rent, helping with, like one person I know, she needed help getting out of the house, and the foundation paid for someone to come and pick her husband up every day. I believe he had Alzheimer's, and to take him to a center a couple times a month for a period of time, and it gave her a break. Someone else who was about to go homeless, I helped with their rent to get them back on their feet because they had to quit working to help take care of their mother. And, you know, just little things like that. Every story is different. You know, people write these stories, and I look at them along with some people that help me and just go through and see who we can help. And I wish I could help more, but there's a limit.
Well, there is, but you're doing what you can with what you have, and that's what caregivers are all about anyway. We do what we can with what we have, the best what we have to offer. And, you know, this is certainly not the way you would have seen yourself in this time of your life, and yet it's got to be deeply rewarding when you look at these folks that you're helping, and you look at the lives that are really struggling, and you understand the heartache and the pain. You know, a lot of caregivers deal with not only the, you know, the, of course, the financial issue is a big issue for all of us when we're getting that, we get what money is just going out the door, it seems like.
Right.
But for every caregiver, regardless of financial abilities or not abilities, for every caregiver, it's those lonely heartache places that we're staring at the ceiling fan at night, having a conversation and with the ceiling fan,
and
mine talks back sometimes. but
well,
you know,
and also, don't you feel, because I've read your story that is very challenging, and as a caregiver, don't you also feel tremendous guilt sometimes?
Well, guilt is one of the.
For me, I felt guilt, like I could do things and my husband couldn't, or I wasn't sick and he was. I keep hearing it from caregivers.
Well, guilt is one of those things that I talk about, the fog of caregivers, fear, obligation, and guilt. And we become so torqued in that guilt. And it's not just guilt over behaviors that we're doing. It's guilt over the fact that you just sometimes want to be able to watch a TV show uninterrupted, or you want to be able
right.
to just to go have a quiet meal somewhere. And you're right. Or you know, I can stand up in the shower. My wife can't.
Right.
You know, or I can just go jump in the car and go, and she can't that easily. And so these are real things. And the only way we're going to deal with those things is if we come together and we strengthen one another and we point each other to a place of safety where we can start making better choices on this for ourselves and recognize, you know, and my faith is a big, huge part of what I do. And understanding that, you know what? I didn't do this to my wife. You didn't do this to Dawn. We are putting
right.
ourselves between this train and a brick wall sometimes. That's what it feels like, where we're just getting squeezed in it. And we're doing all that we know to do, and we're going to make mistakes with it. And all the caregivers that are listening across the country right now on the Truth Network, you know, we all have that in common. We feel such frustration. And then when you got parents with special needs children, they feel such tremendous guilt, Kathy, over bringing a child into the world that has special needs. And, you know, the best way we can do that is to wade into that with them and give them, penetrate that isolation that they're having and let them know that they're loved, they're cared for. I point them to God's faithfulness to them, and that He has not abandoned them in this. And I haven't seen any. If somebody asked me, said, "Well, what do atheists say that are doing this like you?" And I said, "Well, I haven't met any 30-year caregivers that are atheists, so I don't know." because it's your faith becomes such a big part of what you're doing here to sustain you in it. But what you're doing is extraordinary, Kathy. And if somebody wants to reach out to you, where do they go?
They can go to my website, which is www.kathycolefoundation.org. And the Kathy is spelled K-A-T-H-I, and Cole is K-O-L-L. So
kathycolefoundation.org. And it's based on the need. So you're looking for families that make you said it was individuals for what, 28,000?
That make less than 28,000 individuals. And it gives all the information on, you look on the website and it'll say Kathy's Caregivers, and then it'll have all sorts of things on the webpage. But if the actual family caregiver or, you know, friend, I'm not doing it for professional caregivers that get paid, but I'm
right.
talking about the people that are in stress, you know, a family member or friend. When they go on the webpage, it says caregiving or caregivers, and they'll be able to, it'll show the application, and they can go right through it, and it explains everything. You know, one thing I'd just like to point out, if there's time.
Sure, we got just a little bit of time.
Okay, one of the things that I wished I had done differently for all those people out there is I'm a pretty organized person, and I always had a calendar for my husband. So every morning I'd say, okay, at 9 o'clock, you know, you're having physical therapy at 8 o'clock, whatever the thing was. He was always on schedule. The only person that was not on that calendar was me. And everyone would say, you have to take some time for yourself. And that doesn't mean, you know, going to a movie sometimes or doing anything. It might just mean sitting in a corner by yourself and reading a book. Well, if I had put me on the calendar, he would have looked at it and said, okay, from 1 to 1:30 is Kathy's time. And I just wished I had done that. And so I'm just
I think
throw that little tip out.
I think that is so important. And that's going to be the title of the blog post I put out about you with this recording, is putting me on the calendar. I think that is a wise thing, Kathy, and I don't think we can measure how important that's going to be to folks that just heard you say that, so I'm very grateful.
Well, because it has to become a habit for the patient to understand that the caregiver needs a little time, too. It's not just the caregiver taking the time, but patients sometimes get a little selfish because they get so used to being taken care of. So there's a little two-way street there, and it needs to become kind of a habit.
That's
anyway.
Wise words from someone who really understands. Kathy Cole, Kathy Cole Foundation. Kathy, you are always welcome on the show. Always. And
thank you. And maybe I've been writing a book, and when it comes out, maybe I can come back on.
You're always welcome. Love to hear from you.
I'm Gracie Rosenberger. 20 years ago, I walked for the first time on two artificial legs, and I'll never forget that day. That day, I not only walked, but I happened to see a documentary about Princess Diana's work with amputees in Southeast Asia. Watching her with people who now looked just like me, I knew in my heart God was calling me to reach fellow amputees with practical help through prosthetic limbs and the life-changing message of the gospel. Since 2005, we've done just that through Standing with Hope. It's the Evangelical Prosthetic Limb Outreach my husband Peter and I founded. By training and equipping local workers in developing countries, we are changing lives one leg at a time. We also collect used limbs, and we work with inmates at a local prison. They volunteer to disassemble the limbs in order to recycle the usable parts. A woman with a broken body working with broken lives in a prison to reach other broken lives in order to point to the one who was broken for us. That's what's happening every day at Standing with Hope. And we invite you to participate with us. Go to standingwithhope.com, please, and learn how you can get involved. I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and by God's grace, I am Standing with Hope.
For more information, visit standingwithhope.com.